What do you think it takes to be an entrepreneur in 2020 in the middle of a pandemic, a world crisis, and probably one of the most difficult environments that any entrepreneur has faced?
You have to have the balls to do things you don't like, and we're not sexist here. you have to have the gall to do things that you don't like, but unnecessary. You need to be able to follow the problem. Like, without a doubt, that's the number one thing. Follow the problem, man. I've been watching a lot of people struggle with COVID, right, with their businesses, and it's very hard. Like, one, I was lucky. I'll describe my business later, but I was lucky. But in that luck, there was a lot of work that went to it, you know. And just follow the problem, man. All economic activity has now been concentrated to relief efforts for COVID. There's a problem to solve there. Like, without a doubt, that's number one thing that should be happening. Follow the problem. You might end up doing things you don't like, but if you got in this to follow your passions, you're fucked. Like, I can guarantee you, you are fucked.
It's such a difficult environment to just be passionate. Like, you really need to have so much more that adds to what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it. Like, this is where the practical side of business, I feel, was really tested. And it wasn't just about how passionate or how much energy you had, but it was like, what are your tactics? What are your strategies? How do you think? How do you, you know, make decisions? What kind of leader are you? How do you see your business, you know, lasting in the next week? That was the sort of decisions people were making, was like, how do you survive? And I don't think passion is like a core driver of something like that. Like, it needs to go beyond that.
Yeah, passion, like, you should not have passion for what you're doing. You should be passionate about your vocation. What I mean by that is, if you're an entrepreneur, you do one thing and one thing only. You solve problems. Like, that's it. That's all you're doing. You're solving problems to extract value from society. If you're not passionate about solving problems, you're redundant. You know, I think what's happening with COVID happens repeatedly in cycles, right? And different things cause it. Think of the dot-com bubble, right, and crash. Think of the financial crash. Think of any society that has existed in history. There's a crash, right? And what the crash does is, I'm reading a book called The Kabbalion. It's about the ancient truths. It's by the three, and basically the book talks about how all religious fundamental truths comes from there. So you can find, that's part of the reason why religions have similarity across whatever religion you're listening to. And I love how it describes the balancing of things, right? That's the first thing. It's like the balance between, so for example, heat is not, heat and cold are not opposites. They're the same things of differing degrees, right? And one of the things that's also true in there is that destruction is a function of creation. It's not opposites. They're different degrees of the same thing. It's the continuous flow of life, right? And we have this disease of the universe and of mankind of excess. And the economies we saw were economies of excess, you know, people raising billions for apps to help their pets be on schedule. Like, that's excess. You know, it's not really necessary. So what the system does every so often is it cleans itself up. And unfortunately, there'll be collateral damage for things that are necessary within that process. But, man, we need to accept the cleanup. Like, this is a cleanup, right? And myself and many other people were collateral damage for the cleanup, you know. When I say myself, things I had envisioned for the year could not happen. They had to change. But in that accepting of life, amazing things happened. You know, accepting the reality of what's coming. I mean, for example, my company were prepping early March, right? Early March for, we're getting locked down. we're going to get locked down, like every other country, we're going to get locked down. So we started prepping then. And worse, we had just employed 5 new people, you know. So it's been a crazy time, man. It's been fucking awesome.
So if we go like into that journey, right, like you guys just ended your year having done almost 100 million in purchase orders for small businesses across South Africa, small to medium businesses across South Africa. What does that actually mean?
Sure. So it's actually almost 100 million for the year in terms of turnover of the company. But we did pass the 100 million mark in terms of funding for the past 3 years we've existed. Man, being part of a company. So just for context, first year we did 1.something million. Second year we did, was it just shy of 11 million? And third year we're just shy of 100 million. The only thing we're angry about is that the first 2 years we kept on adding zeros, and then this time we didn't add a zero, but we almost did. We almost did, right? I think we landed up at 92 million for the year. But the funding we have provided has surpassed 100 million if you take the full 3 years we've existed. And what does that mean? I don't know, Mash. It means more stress. Mash, if I'm being honest, you know, this is my honest, it just means a different kind of stress. I don't feel personally richer, although I'm personally more comfortable financially, but just means a higher level of management. You know, I'm starting to develop, loosely put, imposter syndrome, where am I supposed to be running this company? Because the things that it requires of me are like, they're interesting, but I never back down on a challenge, right? So I almost want to sit in the corner of the company and be in charge of brand and innovation, right? And then somebody else runs the rest of the organization. And don't get me wrong, my COO is very strong, right? She holds most of the company together, the operational part. I'm in charge of the growth, right? And but still, the CEO still needs to report to me, so I'm still accountable for her work to the board, loosely put, right? I'm still hired by my board, and the board was very kind to us, the execs and the team. One of the best paying companies, man. I can near guarantee that. Oh, no, I don't. I can't. I don't know other people's paychecks.
Look, in an environment where, you know, a lot of people are being let go and a lot of companies are, you know, downsizing, you guys are actually hiring and expanding and making moves to grow. What do you think prepared you especially for a time like this? I know you've spoken about, you know, running lean, you know, not having an office space that you pay for, you know, in total, but like having an open workspace instead. Having a team that can work from home. What other things do you think prepared you guys for this moment to be able to function as a company, but actually excel as well?
So it's actually all of the stuff that's outside of the COVID, right? It's all of the reading I've done historically on the likes of Rothschild and books like that, right? You know, we talk about the Rothschild dynasty loosely now that it's got its fingers in every part of the world, right, economically. But we never discuss how they got there. There's a book, The Ascent of Money. It discusses how they got there. And how they actually got there is crazy. They were merchants, right? And then it was wartime, and the sovereign, the state, needed people to move money to the front lines of the war, right? Move resources to the front lines of the war. And them as shipping merchants were the ones who were available. And that's where they developed their stronghold on economies. It's in the middle of crisis, they were the ones willing and daring to go the mile that nobody else is willing to go, right? And that cemented them with governments. With their government, and then they started realizing that they could bet on wars, you know. It's crazy. So the preparation for that was when we started seeing lockdown coming, and we're like, there's going to be an economic bloodbath. How do we position ourselves to be able to take advantage of the only places there'll be winnings, right? Some of it you can't predict. And this is one thing that entrepreneurs say loosely, but it needs to be drilled in. You know, I love mathematics and empirical evidence, but you will be lucky 60% of your entrepreneurship journey. 60% of it is pure luck. And the only thing you can do for that luck is preparation. That's the only thing you can do. Sometimes you'll be unlucky. Luck, like I was talking about, luck and bad fortune are not opposites. They're the same thing of different degrees. Is sometimes you're going to be unlucky, you know. And if I was to talk about the practical preparation, read everything you can get your hands on strategy. When I mean strategy, I mean strategy, historic strategy, not even new age books. Another problem that we have in society is that every time there's a new idea, we latch onto it and that becomes the new doctrine, right? That is bullshit. Like, that is the highest amount of bullshit. Nicholas Taleb says it nicely. If my grandmother can't hold that philosophy is false. Because for a philosophy to be true, it needs to be timeless, you know. And read as much as you can. Read Nicholas Taleb, Black Swan. Nicholas Taleb wrote Black Swan, Skin in the Game, Fooled by Randomness. What am I forgetting? Anti-Fragile. Yo, those books, if you love modeling the world, those books are important to understand how the world actually functions, you know. So
how important read as much is as it possible. To have that focus on understanding models for how the world works, but also having models in how you live your life that you can apply to the work that you do?
I think it's central, having those models, and they must be your own, you know, of course derived from inputs from other people, right? But they must be your own. It's like, I've got, you know, there's one interesting thing. I was actually having a debate with Craig this morning, and it was funny when I was laughing at that debate, because one of the things is there are different personality types, right? And some of it is biological, some of it is nurture. So my personality slant is on, there's this personality test I did. It's called the logician. I'm the logician in that personality test, right? And it uses the 5 character modes. Is figure out what works for you, right? Figure out what type of, and I think that personality test, what's it called? It's like it's based on the Briggs, Myers stuff, right? And then you figure out the models that work for you. And I've got a model that works for me, number one above all things. Try to tell the truth at all flippant times, because how societies collapse is through the small lies. You know, it's like, it's the small lies, and how, if that matters to you, how society functions, it's through the small lies you tell yourself, you know. I'm not saying now just tell everyone how you're having sex with your girlfriend, but try to tell the truth as much as possible, you know. That's my personal philosophy. You need to also find your own personal philosophy that helps you navigate through this world of entrepreneurship and personal life and make sure they are aligned. A good example of this is, one of the things we noticed, so we've had a formal board since last year, November. And one of the things we've noticed creeping up is that the operational company is diametrically opposed in conduct to the board, right? And it's one of the things we brought up and we said, no man, this board functions very differently from the operational company. And what we should do, not should do, one of the things we should look at is that we're still running the company, the team tasked with running the company is the same team tasked, is the same philosophy, has the same philosophy as the people on the ground actually running the company, right? That was also important in my personal life. The things I believe in business, do I believe them in my personal life, right? The various principles, you know, and that just simplifies life and makes you less depressed with the work you do. And not everyone has the opportunity. Well, fuck that shit. Actually, everyone has the opportunity to choose. We just choose certain things. We choose to avoid hunger so that we can work in an environment we don't like, right? And we must be conscious of that choice. I think the doctrines of 2015 onwards in South Africa have eradicated the idea that human beings have choice and we're a function of our circumstances and our environment. I think that is terribly toxic. To tell an able-bodied adult, giving them viable and plausible excuses for playing victimhood. Mesh is going to cut the shit out of that, because I know Mesh is not going to let that shit go out of his podcast.
Oh, no, and I'm Mesh, not going to cut anything. I've decided I'm no longer editing podcasts. I feel like, you know, there's a version of entrepreneurship that's sort of starting to depress me. It's really starting to affect the way I feel and think and see things, because we've decided to package it a certain way and just sort of present this perfect molecule or like this perfect capsule of, okay, this is what entrepreneurship is in South Africa. And a lot of those things is very dishonest. It's very packaged very well and nicely put. And I actually think it's something that we're doing a disservice to not just entrepreneurs that, you know, exist in the space and are looking at others as a motivator or as a blueprint, but more so for young people that are going, hey, I'm starting my life as a professional and I'm looking at different things that I could possibly be doing. And they look at entrepreneurship and they go, oh, this is a perfect capsule. I can take this capsule and apply it in my life and just like,
sure,
it will work. And my problem with that is like, it's dishonest, it's disingenuous, and it will lead to a lot more pain and hurt and people feeling like they were cheated or scammed, because you go into this thinking that it's all, you know, interviews, photo shoots, victory laps, and your first what, 3 years, there's none of that and no one cares about what you're building. Or you get some success and it feels like that, and then it drops off. And like, there's a reality I feel like we are not speaking about. And I want this podcast to become a blueprint for how honest and more open we need to be about the ecosystem. And that's why, like, I feel like the best podcast I've ever had have been with you, because you have been the one person, consistent guest, one, yes, but a consistent friend in the ecosystem that I can say, hey, Leanda, what do you think about what's happening here? And you'll say, oh no, that's complete bullshit. There's no value there. And there's too few people that are honest and open enough to say, hey, that is a branding exercise. Those people don't actually care about entrepreneurs. You should be looking for someone that's doing something much more deeper in terms of offering value and trying to change their situation. And I saw a post by Lebo, I think yesterday it was, and he was saying, you know, everyone's giving black entrepreneurs specifically, you know, training programs and incubators. And I posted this as well, but I didn't say the word black because I was even scared to be honest and say, look, we have an ecosystem that's disproportionately allocating resources to a certain type of entrepreneur and sending the other entrepreneurs to trainings for 3 years. So a black entrepreneur spends 3 years in an incubator, a white entrepreneur spends 3 months and then gets all the resources. Well, you know, it's those differences in how the ecosystem allocates resources, but more than that, how dishonest and disingenuous we're being about the realities and the actual events of what happens in this ecosystem at a granular level. So no more editing. We don't, all that I just said was about one thing. I will not edit anything you say.
Ah.
So please be as open and as candid as you possibly can.
Can I now talk about tossing salad, which I've never done? Because it don't get edited out. Oh, shit. Fuck, I couldn't resist. I love what you've just said. And, you know, there's multiple levels where we could change that. And when I look at it, right? The book I'm reading, Kabbalion, it's so interesting. It says something. It says, when the ear of the student is ready, the voice of the master will appear. So why that's important to what you've just said is there's something we need to do just as the black population. Forget entrepreneurs, as the black population. We need to stop getting excited by gestures of grandiose stories and gestures of this is what success theater. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for, right? I'll give you an example. I had an argument in a WhatsApp group with some friends, some deep thinkers, when Black Lives Matter started. And they were like, they shared a message from Netflix. Netflix had put up Black Lives Matter and a whole message schlep about that. And they were like, this is powerful. I'm like, what the fuck is powerful about that? Nike did that 4 years ago. We're back here. Black people getting shot by police. It's not powerful at all. Like, this is me doing a value, what's this thing called?
Value signaling.
Exactly. This is me value signaling to win your sentiment. There's nothing powerful about this, and I'm not trying to critique Netflix or Nike particularly. I'm just saying we get, you know, that old analogy that they used to say is that they joke about this. It's a false story, but it's an interesting joke. They said they gave a mirror to Shaka and then we lost the land type of thing, right? That analogy is quite apt to this. It's like we love these grand gestures of affiliating with blackness. It's like, fuck, shut up. Like, fuck, stop rewarding sentiment. The structural problem of black people dying in America, which we'll discuss in a different tone or segment, is a function of economics. Until you fix the economics of black people, like, you don't have the prerequisite power to change the power politics of the system. So the system can kill black people without any consequences because the power does not lie in the... Fuck. Like, this annoys me to the T, you know? Like, it's the worst kind of thing.
But what would real support and allyship actually look like?
Huh. So, interestingly, I'll answer first the entrepreneurship, then come back to that, right? The first layer in entrepreneurship is just buy and shut up. Buy and shut up. If you got good service from a black entrepreneur, shout it from the top of your lungs. If you got shit service, point it out to them before you come to social media, right? We've got this very bad disease. We never say when Pick and Pay fucks up an order or Woolworths fucks up an order, we don't say white entrepreneurs, right? We say Pick and Pay and Woolworths. But one black entrepreneur fucks up your order, it's like black entrepreneurship with the exorbitant prices. And it's like, that's the first layer, right? And that creates the economies of black entrepreneurship thriving, right? You change the economics. And then secondly, two black entrepreneurs, stop doing it for the gram. Like, fuck. Like, guys, I'm running a business.
Crazy. It's kind of crazy, right? Like, the first podcast we ever did was called Stop Building Brands, Start Building Businesses. Obviously, that's like an oversimplification, but like, what it went into was focusing on the value that you create, the problem that you're solving, and the business that you're building, instead of focusing on like what it might look like on the outside, and having an over focus on the aesthetic of what your entrepreneurship journey looks like. I feel like that hasn't changed. I actually think it got worse.
Yeah, it would, because there's less and less value being created, but there's everyone who's figured out how to hack the system. I can be popular if I can post X, Y, and Z, right? Like, that's literally what's happened to the market, right? So if we stop entrepreneurs from doing it for the gram, fuck, we'd win, man. Because, man, the real entrepreneurs I know, and don't get me wrong, there are real entrepreneurs I know who don't do it for the gram, even though they are on the gram because it drives their business. But if you stop posting and fucking actually build, Let me give you context, Mesh. Let me give you context. I run a fucking 100 million rand a year company now, right? I drive a Ford Figure. What's this? Not even a Ford Figure. Suzuki Swift. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. It's just... But even on top of that, it's not even mine. The company owns it, right? Where all of my money goes is on my daughter, right? Like most of it, right? And that's what we should be building. We're first generation entrepreneurs. You're not going to change structural problems of economies by being a heavy spender, then say it's my prerogative. Fuck you. It's not your prerogative. You're part of a collective that's been disenfranchised for over 400 years in various ways and in everywhere in the world. You need to jack the fuck up and be part of the solution. Because what you're going to do is create jealousy amongst the people who are around you. You see what happened to that guy who won those tenders and was posting? On one side, you're like, fuck, we hate ourselves too much. Why are we bringing this guy down? And then the other side, why are you showing off to the world your proceeds? It's like, man, shut the hell up and build, you know? Like, whew, man, I'm passionate about that. I'm sure you can tell.
What do you think people misunderstand about that responsibility of being, you know, first generation entrepreneurs, right? So the whole idea is that, you know, our parents couldn't do it. That wasn't a dream that they had. Obviously, there are some parents that got through, you know, grandparents that got through, that found a way to make it happen. But we're generally the first sort of generation of people that actually can think about entrepreneurship as being a viable option and like being very, very committed and building something valuable. What do you think young people misunderstand about the responsibility that comes with, and what does it actually mean?
I think the problem why we misunderstand that is because, what's that saying about what bullshit rises to the surface, right? Something like that, right? Like, but like the worst of the world, the worst of it rises to the surface. The things that are famous are bullshit. And if you follow those metrics of bullshit, you're going to measure your wealth on that bullshit, right? I'm going to say it loosely, expensive cars, expensive watches, big houses, Instagram pretty pictures inside homes, right? Like, it's like, that's not it. You know, you're still lonely in your home after those likes. Like, the things that give you real substance and value is being able to provide for the next generation. And I say this loosely because I've got a child, right? That's what also was my wake-up call. I'm not saying everyone go out and make children. Jesus Christ, not with the mindsets we currently have. I'm still fucking learning how to be a parent. Right? I think what also we don't consider is when we look at white people with uber wealth, we don't realize that their first generation, of course, segmented and catered to them, especially the Afrikaans race, were lowly workers and farmers, and they were helped a lot by government. Another thing is, we need to fucking hold this government to account, man. And we like to blame the elders. No, it's our youth's fault. Youth don't go out to vote and make them feel it. We vote on Twitter, right? It's like, if you watch Twitter, you'd swear that EFF was in power, right? And they're still dawdling there. What are they at now? 10%? 20%? Man, how you change the world is you change yourself first. You fix you. That's how you change the world. You fix you and you get yourself, your shit together. And I'm not trying to hold a high moral standard that everyone must ascribe to. I'm a smoker who's tried to quit 3,000 times and I fail every single time. And I still try. Luckily, I quit drinking. And trying to go down the straight and narrow, you know. So fix yourself and fix your immediate home. Your immediate home breeds and builds human beings who go fix the rest of the world or their immediate circle with their friends. And then they build homes that fix themselves. So fix yourself first. If I was to have one solution to all of this, is get off all fucking social media. Be only on WhatsApp. Get off all of it. And then go find ways you can fix the problems of the country. I think social media... Is the gift and the curse, you know? Back to that opposite thing. It's the gift and the curse. It's a gift in terms of ease of access of people, but it's the curse because it's got false connections and false perceptions of what life really is, you know? So we need to get off the gram, man. Man, I don't know if you've ever seen my Instagram. Have you seen how shitty it is? Like that's no coincidence. Like, it's like, I don't have wealth to flaunt or to pretend to have wealth. The wealth I have is the people I love and the people that love me, right? That's my true wealth, you know?
Look, I will say, though, you know, unfortunately, I'm a social media addict. That's a reality that
you
I'm
make not money off of it. Right? Fuck that shit. Let's tell the truth, Mesh.
Yes, I do make money off of it. But here's the sort of nuanced thing that I wanted to say was, like, there are parts of social media, I believe, that where I feel I can, because of that access to people, and being able to focus my content or the work that I'm doing on enabling people to do stuff that they believe in, right? So making content about how to start a podcast, how to build an online store, how to do this, how to do that. I use those platforms to share that content and also, you know, leverage brands to be able to make money from that
100%.
Platform. And I think there is value in doing that. One, driving impact, building communities, and making sure that you're adding something that actually is counter to the reality of what it is now, right? So a lot of it is noise. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't realize, is how much noise you take in, how much filth you take in, how much bad you take in, right? Just energy, not even like specific comments or anything, just energy. It just feels heavy. And I think this pandemic, or just like the crisis and the lockdown and everything about it, has really shown me, was like, if you don't take the responsibility to curate your experience of social media, and more than that, curate your experience of the world and start to protect yourself emotionally, psychologically, health-wise, whatever it is. Like, this pandemic threw away everything around your circumstances determine everything. I feel like you have so much control in your own, like, who you are and what you do and the decisions you make are fundamental to what happens to you. And, like, it's just, it's the simple things of, like, okay, if you don't sanitize your hands and you keep on touching stuff and you put your hands near your face and then you catch this thing and then, you know, or you don't wear a mask and you put yourself at risk. It's the same thing with, you spend 5 hours on Twitter, you don't curate who you follow, you don't curate the content you're consuming, you're just constantly taking in all of it, rubbish, and there's no protection, you don't protect yourself in any way, you don't take a break, you know, switch off, screen off, just like, okay, I'm going to step away from this place, because I always think of social media now as a place that you visit, and the longer you stay there, the more difficult it is for you to understand how it affects you, and pulling away from that is important.
100% agree, like, absolutely agree. And there's something also you touched on about this pandemic that it also showed, like, it's a good demonstration of the thing I was describing earlier, that if you don't take care of yourself, you risk hurting other people, right? Like, so you might not die from the COVID, right? If you stop taking care of yourself, that's how you fix the world, right? If you don't do that, you might kill your parents. Like, how do you live with yourself knowing that, right? And that's a good apt analogy for how you conduct yourself influences your life, and you need to curate. And I want to be very clear, Mash, when I was saying that, it's because I speak so bluntly with swear words now. When I was saying you're making money off of that, it's because you're fucking adding value. You're teaching people how to podcast, right? You're giving people resources about where to find the important resources within entrepreneurship. You're taking your view from working in the ecosystem and going, that's bullshit, that's not. Although I do think you curate that so that you don't hurt the bag. you know, I'll always call you out, my nigga. But there's value being added, you know. And also
Let's talk about that. Like, you know, people say that a lot, adding value. What does that actually mean to an entrepreneur or creator in a practical sense?
Practical sense is my life after interacting with you or your business is better than it was before, and you've taken some of my money to give me that value. Like, that's literally it. You can figure out what that value is by finding the problems, right? Uber Eats. I hate cooking. I hate getting out of the house to go do something, right? It's like, oh, now I have to go prepare and pretend I bathed. No, I can sit in my place and order some food, right? I feel like this food, you've solved the problem for me, right? And my problem is worth more than the money I'm giving you for this problem. Like, literally, thinking about, and it's the time value of money. Like, if I think about, okay, I feel like this food, but in order to go get it, I'm going to have to first bath and then drive out. So the bathing, let's say half an hour to an hour, however long. And then driving out, it's the 30 minutes there and back, no matter how close it is. And then coming back, having exhausted that energy, and then eating, or eating even in the car inconveniently, because then I come back, I've wasted 2 hours of my day, so I have to get back to work. Instead, you've taken 15 rand, or 30% of the value of my meal, and charged me that so that you can save me 2 hours. Loosely put, for example, somebody running a company of my size, the value of your hour is anywhere from 1,000 rand to 2,000 rand, loosely put. So you saved me 4,000 rand, right? And when we start thinking about it that way, instead of trying to be a price point entrepreneur going, yeah, this is too expensive, this is too cheap, you have to realize what is the value I am creating and what is it worth to the other person. You know, this is how companies get sold. Companies that are doing 10 million get sold for a billion to another company. WhatsApp is a good example, right? WhatsApp was not really making money, right? It was making money by trying to stop how much people were signing up, right? With that, if you renew your subscription, we'll charge you, I think it was 10 Rand or whatever, or a dollar, right, per year, to slow down people subscribing. But it wasn't really making money. But it got sold for, was it 20 billion or 2 billion US dollars?
20.
$20 billion.
I think it was 20, yeah.
It has paid back its money manifold to Facebook. Because now Facebook can look at your WhatsApp chats and act like a Google search. When you're texting someone and telling them, I need X, Y, and Z, right? Facebook reads that and then takes its advertising and plants that thing in front of you, you know? Like, WhatsApp has paid for its price, you know, many times fold over in revenue, you know? Yeah, so absolutely. It's understanding that, get out of your head, get out of yourself and know your customer. What is your customer's pain point, right? And how much is it worth to them? And do they perceive it that way, you know? And that's yeah. adding value, you know?
And I think another one that people, you know, use as just a, this is what entrepreneurs should be doing is solve problems, right? So in the world we exist in right now, what do you think the opportunities are?
Who's spending? I mean, the good question is, who's spending right now, you know? There's only two categories of people who are spending or organizations that are spending. Government and corporates, right? Corporates that are open. Those are the people who are spending. What problems are they dealing with? I've got a friend. I can't give too much details on this because, I mean, we're discussing it in confidence, right? He was running a different business, right? Before COVID, was doing very well. And it's still doing okay. But when COVID started, he noticed, oh, corporates are going to need X, Y, and Z, right? Man, that business has sold more in its first 2 months of existence and raised, I think it raised 2.5 million in that time in grants. It sold more than what his business was doing on a month-to-month basis already, right? Like, and it's like, and I like him a lot because he's a problem solver. But somebody on the outside looking in would say, oh yeah, I only got that because of white privilege. I'm like, that's nonsense. Like, if you know how that guy works, like, if, yes, like, there's no such thing, you know? So, unfortunately, I can't give the full details of that because we were discussing it in confidence. But basically the point is, if you solve problems, you solve problems that are relevant to the people that are still functional. Corporates have to do various things in order to comply with the new laws, you know? Government needs to supply all sorts of PPE and various other things to their various departments. Everyone is tendering now. Like, go tender. Go find something. Even if you were a cookie maker, go find a tender for where they need cookies. I'm going to make a loose example. The eating schemes for schools, right? Primarily what you need to do there is go to the... I'm going to give everybody the same advice so that the price goes down. You have to go to the fresh produce market, get a quote and get a sense of what the pricing is like for the various items, then go tender for with government. Add maybe a 20% markup, if you do add a markup, and then sell it to government. And then you're competing with other people where you're just delivering that thing. And why I'm telling everyone to go do this is that one of the things that will save this government from overspending is if there's a lot more people tendering. If there's a lot of people tendering, they're going to have to, by law, pick one of the cheapest of those people to supply the goods. Right now, there's too few people tendering. And what ends up happening is that there's overspending by government. They're buying their goods at retail prices. Jesus Christ, it's scary. And I know this because that's primarily what my business does, the People's Fund. We fund purchase orders for people who've got contracts with government and corporates. And one of the things that scare me is government is overpaying for their goods, like badly overpaying, right? And terribly overpaying because there's not enough people tendering. We have not created perfect competition. But at the same time, I do believe with their philosophy of tendering is going to be the best way to get as many people into the economy in a way that they can be functional as possible. Because it's not easy. It's quite tedious. But it is equal access to opportunity, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think governments have like a massive, massive responsibility. Not only to enable entrepreneurs and, you know, small businesses and just people in general. Do you think we have a government that's really committed to doing that? And how effective has it been?
I think democracy is the worst way to build a developing economy. Democracy is nice for a rich country because the incentives of democracy are fucked up. I'm incentivized to appear to be good. So I'm taking the question a level up. I'm going, there is no incentive for government to do good. The incentive is to look good. Politics is the proverbial original social media. You know, it's the original gram. There's absolutely no incentive for the government to actually do good. And there's places where it does do good. Like, it's crazy. Like, you know, with our purchase order funding, we've noticed places where government has figured out some things and you're like, wow, you're efficient and you do this well, right? Which is hidden from the rest of the market. But all of the other stuff is like, it's set up to be bullshit, like absolute bullshit. You know what I mean? There's no chance of that. I think the only problem is that with a dictatorship, you're playing the lotto. You either have a good one or a shit one, you know. But loosely statistically speaking, developing countries fare better with... I'm going to say that wrong and I don't want to lie. My observation, when I look at Asia specifically, that a slightly less democratic society where there's a single focus on an objective makes it easier to move people out of poverty. Democracy is that you've got too many voices, you know. Right now, like, government is dealing with the perceptual democracy of why are you taking our Alka way away? Like, it's like, you know, if I was in government and it's going to be sucky, like, alcohol wouldn't exist as a legal drug. Like, you'd rather bootleg. I don't care if you bootleg. And the argument is that the taxpayer, we're losing tax money because, guys, we're basically comparing money to people's lives. It's like, this is, and I'm not saying it's not nuanced. I was worried that I'm going to finish a podcast without using my favorite word. I'm not saying
nuanced.
I'm not saying it's not nuanced, you know, the economics of it. But when I say to people's lives, it's, you immediately see all of the social ill, crimes and casualties disappear as soon as we remove alcohol from South Africa, right? It's, we're arguing about the right to sell alcohol and cigarettes. Cigarettes kill 1 in 2 people who smoke. We're arguing about cigarettes. And don't get me wrong, the studies are showing that nicotine combats COVID. So I can hear that argument, right?
Just by the way, we have... this is not a health podcast. Do not take any advice.
Please don't take health advice from Leo and Jafta.
Yeah.
I'm a body hacker. But anyway... not doing very well right now. But anyway, the point is that having the right to argue that annoys the crap out of me. It's like, can we have a focused objective? Because in an organization, you've worked in a startup that grew quite quickly. The number one thing was that everyone needed to be focused in one direction, right?
Yeah, one, you need direction. One vision. You need a vision that goes above all things. And it needs to... So with every decision you make, there has to be a link that says, okay, how does this add back to the vision that we have, right? So any decision, any partnership, any move you make, anything you say, do, or, you know, think of needs to be focused on how does this add back to the vision. And I think that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs and creators struggle with, is understanding what that vision might be, but also shaping their actions or matching their actions to that vision in a real way. So even in a country context, so we can take it from a country context to right down to just, you know, an individual. If you don't understand why you're doing something and what's the overarching goal above everything, it's really, really difficult to see how you'll do it or what it's going to take to do it. And like, I think that's a perfect, you know, intro to this last question, which is like, what is the ultimate vision of the People's Fund, but also your ultimate vision in life?
So, so I was actually answering this question this week. So my ultimate vision in life is I'd like human beings to be dealing with the existential question of why do we exist? And above that, how do we continue our existence if it matters? So if we answer that first question in the affirmative that our existence matters, which is open for debate, how do we continue our existence in a way... or sustain it in a way that is symbiotic with the environment we live in. And one of the existential crises we have around that is global warming. But nobody's focused on that because why? We're stuck in identity politics, right? And what the vision of the People's Fund is, you remember I used to have a company called Paybook, and that was like arguably my first company that I grew to something where I got a little bit comfortable. And I realized when I got to that comfort that I was hit by my worst depression. Why? Because my why of Paybook was to prove a point and figure out what it feels like to arrive. And immediately when I arrived, I realized all of this shit doesn't matter, right? So, but I would have never understood that on an empty stomach, right? So one of the things is nobody's going to listen to the global warming argument when blackness is still suffering adverse inequality. And not just blackness, like all of the elements of intersectional feminism, right? Like blackness, gender, sexual predilection, and all of those things. So if you can solve the number one impediment to those power dynamics, right, which is the economics of it, we can start having conversations. Because I can't talk on an empty stomach, right? So that's the ultimate vision of the People's Fund, is equal access to opportunity for those who strive to seek it. Actually, Tlulu said that, you know, within the company, he framed that, right, like quite nicely. Like, we believe in access to opportunity for those who strive to seek them, right? Seek out those opportunities and execute on them. So the ultimate vision of the People's Fund, 2030, we must be the preferred purchase order funding company on the continent, right? Doing $10 billion in financing US dollars per year, right? That's the ultimate vision. Then I can exit the company. I'm happy there. I'm done. Like, then I can exit. And just a bit of background of what is the People's Fund, because we can't assume that people have been listening to every one of the podcasts we've done together. People's Fund is a purchase order fund.
You're going to wait until we hit an hour of recording to say this?
Yeah, because when they're ending, then they can go apply to get funding. Fuck, marketing 101. Like, fuck, you don't want to disturb the content by them googling www.people.co.za.
Go for it.
Fuck. So the People's Fund is a purchase order funding platform. Basically what you do, you come to us when you've won a contract with government or corporate, and then you ask for funding, we fund it, and then we take 6% of the value of your purchase order. We've done this to the tune of 100 million. You can find us on TP_fund on Twitter and Instagram, and on our website, thepeople.co.za. Please select, when you say, how did you hear about us, please select Mesh Startup so that I can come back to this podcast, because Mesh knows I will not fucking come back if there's no leads converting from this fucking podcast.
Get your purchase order, guys. Just say that link one more time, though. I feel like it wasn't that clear.
Okay. So the website is www.thepeople.co.za. I forgot how to spell the people there for a second.
No,
I hope I spelled it right.
Last question.
And then click on get funded.
Last question.
Last words. I feel... Mesh, I just realized something.
Wait, I have a question before you do your summary.
Oh, you said last words. Oh, sorry.
What is your advice for young entrepreneurs, creators, and small business owners, whether you are about to get into it, okay, or you're already in it but you're struggling? Like, what's your advice for someone that's going, you know what, I really want to be an entrepreneur and I want to create value and I want to solve problems? What's your advice for that person?
So the one thing in your question that threw me off was somebody saying, I really want to be an entrepreneur. That's a first red flag that you should get the fuck out of this industry, because you are associating it with some kind of prestige, for lack of a better way of putting it, right? The only thing you should care about is solving problems. So the first point of advice is, are you satisfied with seeing a world with your vision and your organization changed in the way that you want to? Does that satisfy you? If yes, then pursue it, because no amount of money will give you that satisfaction that comes with that. Pursue it wholeheartedly. If you just want to be an entrepreneur, get the hell out of here, man. Get the hell out of here, man. Go do something else. This is not for the glory, man, or the honor mentions. this is not for the glory or the honor mentions. Everyone who's got glory will tell you that it's fickle. In fact, the more successful your organization becomes, the less you want to do interviews or glory things. You hate them. It's like Mesh will tell you, like, Every time he says, oh yeah, I've got a talk going on and I'd like you to come on, it's like, oh fuck, Mesh. Like, what is it about? You know, like, does it matter? You know? You know? Because it's like, ah, man, I think like they're a waste of time, you know? We're rejecting PR interviews all the time and it makes some of my friends very angry. And I love them to bits, but I can't stand doing talks. I can't stand it. It's like we're wasting time. I think the last talk I did, I told the entrepreneurs, who here owns a business? They raised their hands. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here? Why aren't you in your business? They never invited me again. Why aren't you in your business building it?
I don't think I'm going to invite you to my podcast again.
Why the fuck are you motherfuckers listening to this shit and not building your brand? Messing with you.
So, yeah, you said you had some final words.
Ah, man. I realized, Kabelion made me realize you and I, right? My relationship with you and I, right? We're different degrees of the same thing. We're searching for truth and we come at it in different ways, right? And yours is the approach of, let me first understand you, give you the things that you are comfortable with, and then we'll bring you to the truth of what's happening. Mine is, I'm going to break your shit apart. Like, I'm going to break your shit apart and if you're not comfortable with that, then you're not riding with us, you know? And that's been the philosophy. If you look at the culture of the People's Fund, man, it's such an insensitive company. And it's funny because we've got, I think, 70%, a workforce of 70% women. But Jesus Christ, the jokes that come out of there, they're so fucking insensitive, right? Like,
all right.
Wow. Even I go, huh, that hurts. But that culture works for the People's Fund because we're saying we're creating an environment where blackness is comfortable, you know, and okay with being who you are in the many shades of blackness, you know.
And imagine what that means to someone that's lived their lives working in organizations where they had to reshape who they were to fit the spaces that weren't built for them.
150%. I mean, one of the people we've hired comes from a semi-corporate background, right? And they were like, wow, like, you guys don't know, like, being able to be myself at work, like, means everything. Tulu said something nice. He said, you know, first time I interacted with you guys, I was like, this is so disorganized. And then I realized you guys execute. Well, never said disorganized, but he's like, this is so weird. Like, it was a culture shock, right? And then he saw us execute and he was like, fuck, I just realized that the actual thing is that we as society have associated whiteness with formality and execution. Instead, it's like it has nothing to do with that. You can be yourself in this environment and still be the best player, you know? So that's the space we're creating at the People's Fund. Be yourself, man. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to be yourself. And we won't agree, you know, like I've got diametrically opposed views with many of the people I work with, you know, and I love engaging with them, you know. I mean, our social media manager, for example, you know her very well, Rutendo, right? Me and her argue all day long about intersectional feminism and various other things, right? Because we've got opposing views on that, right? But we have an amazing relationship, you know, because that's allowed within the company to be different.
That's powerful, man. I really, really appreciate your honesty, your openness, your willingness to do this every other cycle. So usually we do it once a year, but this is the kind of year that we had to do it twice. So I appreciate this. I appreciate my relationship with you. I think you're a super game changer, man. I can't wait to see what you do in the future.
No, thanks, man. It's crazy, actually, when you mentioned that. I know it was that closing, but, you know, it's crazy. When me and you were talking, beginning of the year, we were doing 5 million a month, right? We're at 20 million a month now, right? Like, it's 6 months later. And it's like, shit. And it's like, you're my stop and smell the roses moment, right? Like, because I'm really frustrated, right? Like, and you can tell even in my tone, right? Like, there's stress. I'm trying to rush so I can go do work, right? But you might stop and smell the roses because it's like, fuck, we've grown, you know?
There's growth happening. And I think you can miss those moments and not be conscious and completely not see or feel or really appreciate what it means. So I'm glad that this helps you do that.
they better fucking sign up for purchase order funding and put Mesh Startup there. Otherwise, I ain't fucking coming back. We ain't smelling roses until fucking 2030 when we've got 10 billion in the fucking bank account. I'm joking, guys. I'm
fucking no, man. Thank you so much.
No, thanks, Mesh. Thanks, Mesh.
Cool.